Let's reconvene and continue our conversation. Can we start the recording for the next session? Done. Thank you very much. So before the coffee break, we discussed some general concerns about structure and the approach. Again, I think from what our overall approach to this piece of work was, we wanted to make sure that we have a central piece of language that we can lean on and that other accountability mechanisms, such as the independent review, can then look at and test whether actions or inactions of ICANN's board have been in breach of the bylaws or not. So that's basically the central document of what we have. And talking about simplicity, I think that it's much easier to convey to the community what changes we made to that. Certainly, we have to be very transparent about what we're doing and why we're doing it. But you don't need too much. You can leave other areas of accountability mechanisms much more general if we're clear about the overarching principles. So I think that this is very important to what we're doing, and this is also a reason why we put it at the very beginning of this 2 days, so that we can maybe go back to it as we move on. Now, I've asked Becky, and she's in agreement with that, to recap a little bit on why the distinction is made between the two sets of principles in the document. I think that's something that's been of concern for Aubrey and for others, so I think we should open the discussion by discussing the distinction, the rationale for it, potential alternatives to that approach, and after we've discussed that, we suggest we go through the principles one by one and get feedback from the group as to what the concerns or the support level of support for those would be. So I would suggest that we hear from, I guess Jan's hand is an old hand, right? An old hand. We hear from Thomas and Aubrey, and then we give Becky the opportunity to refresh our memories on what the distinction between the two areas is. Thomas.
The bottles are glued here on the table, Summer, so I can't move these things. Okay, thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. Just a comment on what has been discussed before, I would actually agree with Chris and others that spoke in the same direction. I think we all agree that this is going in the right direction, but if we want to have and keep everybody on board, we need to take them along, and that takes time. And these amendments may all be right and well thought through, but if we want to be accountable ourselves to the community, including those that are not here, that don't have the resources to follow this in detail, we need to give them some time to go through this. And that may be difficult before, let's say, a first physical meeting in the case of the GAC, for instance, because I'm sure that at least some GAC members will want to know what that means, that GAC advice is taken into account unless it's inconsistent with ICANN's mandate mission, because that would then raise the question, who decides what is consistent, what is inconsistent, and so on and so forth. So coming from a country that is organized and the decision-making is made bottom-up, my experience is that if you go too fast with all the best intentions, if people don't really understand or they fear that they don't see all the consequences, they just say no. In my country, this happens a few times a year when they are allowed to vote on issues. And because I think we are on the right track, we may think of how to maybe split the process in two, that we agree on some principles, that we agree to amend in the bylaws, develop a process for this with a timeline that may be slightly longer than expected. I don't know, maybe until the Dublin meeting, but that would allow us nevertheless to move ahead with the transition in the understanding that these amendments will be agreed later this year, and once it's agreed, that will be considered completed before that, that would be considered incompletion or something like that. So it shouldn't, I don't think that this would render the whole exercise impossible, but I think we should give accountability at least the minimum of time that we hope it might take to actually work. Thank you.
Avery.
Thank you. Avery speaking. The one thing I'd like to ask while going through the rationale for directing the values into greater values and lesser values is perhaps an explanation of why something fell from being just a value to being a lesser value. So why, not only why was the division made, but why does something end up a lesser value? Thanks.
I'm sure that Becky will take that on board when she shows us through the document again. Next is Jordan, then Chris, and after that we close the queue for this section and move to Becky.
Can I just make 2 points? At the moment, the values that are in the bylaws have that mealy-mouthed text you can see on the left about the fact that they're not binding and they're broad and they might be balanced. So, and if we keep that kind of text for the lesser values, what we're saying is not that they're lesser than today's. We're saying they're the same as today's. What we're saying is that there needs to be some that have got a higher priority and that are more tightly held, and where the balancing between them needs to be on a much narrower basis as proposed. So I think maybe this is just spin, but I think it's more important to think about that we're raising some values up and holding them tighter rather than turning any values into second class, even though the act of doing that effectively does so. The other point I was just going to make was in response to Thomas Schneider, and it comes back to our timetable discussion that's scheduled for tomorrow. But I think the point is well made that we do have to make sure that we aren't stampeding the community to get our work done in time to meet someone else's deadline for another process, i.e. the transition. So if it takes us a meeting or two, that's stuff to note and to bring back to the table tomorrow. Thanks.
Chris?
Thank you. Thanks. Also, two points. I agree with Jordan. Frankly, I'd like to see those, speaking personally, I'd like to see those words that are currently in the bylaws disappear completely. I think they're appalling and basically just give the board an opportunity to ignore everything if it chooses to do so. I understand why they're there, but that doesn't mean I agree with them. And secondly, I wanted to pick up on Thomas's point as well. It occurs to me that maybe this working group should... Look, no one apart from us reads the list. The list is awash with emails. There are God knows how many. I've lost count. Unless you're actually involved in this, you're not going to read the list. I don't think we can afford to wait until the next ICANN meeting. I think we should ask the staff to get ICANN communications to talk to us about how we can deliver the message about what we are doing as clearly and as simply as possible to everybody as soon as possible. In other words, don't wait for us to finish everything. Don't wait for us to worry about the words, but actually say, we're working on this. If you want to know what we're doing, see this link. I think we should do that as soon as possible. Thanks.
You just look at the back of the room. We have explained there. We have Jim Tengrove there, and the intention is to be in a position to inform the community as soon as practically possible after this week of meetings. Becky.
Thanks. Just to go back on the division, which I will resist calling greater or lesser values because I don't think that's what's going on. The current mission and core values statement was substantially the product of the Evolution and Reform Committee in 2003. These are not actually the 1998 bylaws, but the first Evolution and Reform Committee work. When they came into being, there was strong call from the community for, you know, for one, making sure that ICANN's scope and mission was limited and articulated, and two, providing some basis upon which decisions, you know, some fundamental grounding for the way in which ICANN made decisions. It was a new thing for ICANN. It didn't exist before. There was concern about how it would work, how these core values and principles would be used against, progress in the organization. And for that reason, and not without some consternation from the community, this squishy language about discretion and balancing and all of those things came in to play. Since that time, we have had a lot of experience. We've had, more than a decade worth of experience with the mission and core values statement. And we're working in a much less sort of uncharted territory. So it's possible to make finer cuts and provide clearer guidance and less discretion with respect to how you balance these things. Now, I'm trying to think of a different word than balance, but I haven't thought of it. Somebody has suggested compromise. All of that is to say, really, there are lots of important things up here, but sometimes, you give more deference to one than to another based on the significance of the issue, what the equities are, what the public interest is, all of those things. So we started from the premise that we could move away from the squishy language based on experience, both good and bad, with this balancing language. And I think that there are people who have been frustrated that the language, discretion and judgment in any situation language has been applied in ways that essentially render the core values meaningless in a review process. At the same time, because we think of these as sort of the fundamental grounds for some of the review and redress procedures, in particular for independent review, we are concerned and aware that if you provide, too many absolutes, then you really open up a process for abusive use of the redress processes that can gum up the works. So that if you applied this very high standard that says you may only, balance to the extent it's necessary to make progress towards a compelling and substantial interest in the, goal in the public interest. It has to be very narrowly tailored to that. It has to be likely to promote the goal that you're seeking to achieve. It has to be the least restrictive means and no broader than necessary. All of those things are important statements about when things are really important, here's how you balance and here's how you evaluate whether the balancing has been done properly. If you applied that high standard to everything in the list, then there is a concern, and I think a legitimate concern, that suddenly these things become all things to all people. And so everybody has an opportunity to complain about anything because the test is so high. So we started to talk about that and to think about ways in which we can avoid some of the abuses of the independent review process that we have seen and some of us may think we are seeing, at the same time we can make meaningful evaluations of these and give the people who are applying the rules. In the first instance, it would be the community and the board and, ultimately the independent review. This very high standard for the critical, fundamental, foundational principles that we think, generally any kind of balancing should be extremely carefully undertaken. Having said that, beyond these critical five fundamental values, we think that there are additional values that are currently reflected in the bylaws, contained in the affirmation of commitments, contributed by the community through the process, that are also critical to ICANN's functioning and that are critical to sort of shaping and guiding the way in which ICANN makes decisions. And while they are critical, they are a little bit less objective, a little bit harder to measure, depend more on a wide variety of circumstances that can't be predicted, and for which greater judgment latitude and a slightly more deferential standard is appropriate. It's not higher or lesser. It's, you know, it's a matter of deference. How much deference in evaluating a decision do you give to the decision-making body in any particular case? That's what the distinction is. Now, we ran through these items yesterday. We agreed on the items that were the top five items. I don't think that we didn't spend a huge amount of time, and the conversation, just to be clear, there was discomfort in the room with this sort of categorization. So this is very much a discussion piece, and where things fall, or even whether the categorization is appropriate, is an item for discussion here. If we decided that we were going to hold everything to exactly the same standard, then I think that it would be very hard to apply the highest standard to any of them. So the trade-off is kind of, do you go with a less deferential standard that's applied to all of them, or do you apply the highest standard to some of them and a more deferential standard to others? And just as a practical matter, that's what we're navigating, is sort of, can ICANN still operate and get its business done while being faithful to its obligations to the community? And where do you, how much deference do you give to decision makers, whoever they are, in any particular situation? So I know that Aubrey's concerned about something I said because I can see. So I'm going to preempt the list and ask her to get it out before we get too far along.
That has raised his hand earlier, so we go to Ellen and then to Aubrey, please.
I just have a mundane operational question. Can someone give us the URL pointing to this document? The one that was distributed in the zip package seems to be different from this one.
Correct. Did it get put up?
It's in the chat or email. I'll find it then.
The link to the document is in the Adobe chat.
Thank you. I'll check.
Aubrey.
Thank you. Aubrey speaking. And I apologize. It's been a problem all the way through my life. That's why I usually sit in the back of rooms where nobody can see my face, because I don't have a very good poker face.
Not a problem.
It is. If you lived my life, it is. But anyhow, I mean, I understand sort of the spin of they're not lesser and then greater, but indeed one gets a greater focus than the other. When I look at them, I see that some of them almost look derivative one of the other, where we say we're going to be democratic and multi-stakeholder, but then in the lesser one, we say we're going to stick to processes and I know I'm not supposed to use the term, but in the second list, you know, that we'll stick to processes. And I don't understand why the sticking to processes and such, if there is going to be such a division, wouldn't be in the top one. I'm certainly comfortable with moving market forces to a lower list. That one seems perfectly fine to me. So, I mean, I'm still uncomfortable with the division, but then I'm still, and even more uncomfortable when I look at what's been divided, and I see relationships between the two, and I see some as perhaps derivative or part of the thing that's in the top list, and wonder if we're going to do this, whether we shouldn't actually try and build one consistent list that includes the derivative parts and is clear. I think the fact that we have one list that gets one treatment and one list that gets another treatment is also a gigantic place for confusion because and future discussions, because are we saying that in all cases something from top list will trump something from second list? And what does that mean, and how can that be abused to sort of say, well, as long as I call a top list issue, the rest of the issues no longer really count because it's the top issues that count. And so all of those things are really what's making me extremely uncomfortable with this
so
as it goes forward.
That's there is another alternative, which is to really pair the list very carefully and apply the same treatment to a very narrow and agreed upon group of values, but it would require getting rid of some of the more amorphous things if we take that approach. But that's certainly an approach.
Lee is next in the queue.
Avery raised my questions, which relate to the relationship between the high status values and the lesser status values, not in relation so much to a particular review process, but more, do the higher values always necessarily trump the lower values? And I'm just wondering whether there needs to be some wording to address the internal relationship between those two sets of values, if you're going to go down that path.
The answer to that question is yes. And they're not there yet. We discuss it. We understand that that's a problem.
Yes, in terms of approach, we should, for the first time during this session, maybe use the Adobe functionality to show support or a lack of support. But let me phrase it in the...
Before we do that, could we ask if people feel comfortable enough with this to be making decisions? To me, it feels a little early in the process, and like we need to go through the individual things and discuss them, as opposed to just the kind of support. I could be wrong, and you guys can all overrule me, but...
I think it might be worthwhile understanding what my proposal was, because I... Okay. I guess we're getting some traction for trying to merge the lists, and I would like to get a better understanding of whether what the atmosphere in the room is, whether people think that we should try to morph the two into one. And if so, then we should take a try on that, make an attempt on that exercise. But Becky, we have 2 minutes to go in this session, right?
That's right.
So what can we do in this 2 minutes? Since we have to wrap up pretty quickly, I just wanted to check whether there is sufficient traction for us to revisit this exercise and try to work on a consolidated list where we don't cluster them into two. So, but let's let's hear the two additional, or three actually additional people that are in the queue. Can I ask you, we have two or four people. Keep it very, very brief. I'm going to close the queue after Sebastian. So let's hear Alan.
Sorry, that was an old hand.
Lee, also old hand?
Yes,
old hand. Paul.
Yes, Paul Rosenzweig. Just a clarifying question about your proposal to take a struple, which is which way would they merge? Would all of the values merge into the upper value where ICANN board decisions were universally subject to stringent and searching review, which is the intention of the top value, or would all of them merge into the lower section where ICANN board and staff decisions get substantial deference? The purpose, as I understood it, of the split was to try and identify areas where we were more comfortable letting the board operate in the normal course of business without review, and that there were other things that we valued higher where we wanted to provide them more search. So I can't vote on your proposal or even your straw poll unless I know which way you're going, up or down.
Sorry, I have the impression that we are... It means that we agree with what it's on the document, because we are talking about process. Let's be agree on what is the list, and then we will see if we merge the list or we didn't merge. If we don't have the list that we agree on, why we discuss about merging or not merging? It will not change what we will write on each and every topic. And it's the same discussion about we are not a document, and we already discussed how we will go for public consultation. First, let's have a document, please.
The question whether you have two sets of principles or only one and how to weigh them is imperative to understand the mechanics of the document. And Paul, your point is well taken. I think logically, I would have pursued an approach whereby you see where, there's derivative ideas so that you cut out the redundant parts and then make the determination as to whether the set can be elevated, as you call it, or lowered. But I think the first question is, can we harmonize that list to be one cohesive list without a value judgment, but just providing for equality of all the points? Because I think that's an overarching concern that the group seems to have. So I would like all of us to use the Adobe. And the question is, do you think we should keep the two-prong structure as proposed in the current document? So those who want to keep the structure of two sets of principles, if you wish, should please say agree.
As
it's written in the document. So you find the agree button at the where there's the this
yeah, it is.
It's not working?
It is working.
It is working. Yeah, the intention is not to vote, just to sort of sense the atmosphere in the room.
Punchy.
What are you calling? What word are you saying? Diremption?
Diremption. It's the forcible splitting apart of things. It's an older word. It's from Latin, so the French and the Spanish should recognize it too.
Looking at this part, if you wish, I guess that shows that we can continue to work on the basis of Becky's structure. I think we need to get better on calling things. I think the mere fact that some of you have the impression that there is two different qualities of principles is worrisome. So if we don't get it right, then the rest of the community might not get it right either. So I think we need to try find the right words that make clear that we're not talking about different, you know, class A or class B sets of recommendations. So we will try to work on the language. We will try to work on the rationale for each of those. And then we will reopen the discussion. But I think that the clear direction from this group is that we should not rush to entirely changing the architecture of this document. We're 5 minutes behind schedule, so with that, I would like to thank Becky and her team for this work. Let's give her a round of applause. And I'd like to hand over to Leon, Leon is going to do the next portion of the agenda.
Okay, so that was the time for, where are we at the agenda? I'm sorry, So, community empowerment, yes. Community empowerment, and well, so far there have been different mechanisms and different documents created by Jordan, to which I invite to take place with us here at the table, so you can take us through what your working party has been up to. So, Jordan, please.
Thank you, Leon. Do we want a bit more guidance about where to start? Thomas, I think you've got a...
Yes, I guess the Jordan's group has been working on two sets of documents. One of which is dealing with mechanisms, the other is dealing with powers. And it was our recommendation for our group's discussion that we look at the different mechanisms first. Jordan and his team have thankfully provided a table comparing the different options that we have, you know, permanent cross-community working group, delegate structure, membership structure, and all these. And we would try to do a test of the atmosphere in the room on those to see whether there is a preferred option that the group has or multiple shortlisted options, whether there are options that we clearly want to rule out, so that as a second step, we can then discuss the powers with a more concrete idea of what the legal vehicle for exercising these powers would be. So we would suggest that we look at the table that you see in the Adobe room first, discuss that. Jordan has kindly agreed to show us through this. There are more documents specifically speaking to each of those. We're not going to go through all of this with the limited time given. Then we take it from there. But let's just go through this table first, please.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. I'm just going to ask you a few questions so I work out how to present this. Who has read this table? Put your hand up, your real hand up in the room if you have. Okay. No, I'm not interested in the Adobe room just at this point, just at this instant. Though people on the room can, of course, wave their hands as well. Who is it worth me just spending a couple of minutes praising what these structures are? Yeah. Okay. So the reason that we separated mechanisms and powers is also worth just mentioning at the start. Whatever your thing you want the community to do, whether it's removing ICANN directors or whether it's vetoing the budget or whatever it is, don't worry about that now. Put that thought out of your head for the time being. All we are talking about at this point of this discussion is how you'd go about doing it. We don't need to worry about what it is. This is the how you do it. This is the vehicle for these powers. That's why we're calling it structures or mechanisms. So don't worry what these things are going to do at this point. We're going to get on to that. And there are five of these listed in the table, and there are five mechanisms that are structures that involve creating something. And there are two that involve empowering existing SOs and ACs to do something. So I'm just going to explain them briefly from left to right through the table. The permanent CCWG, well, we are a CCWG. So if you don't know what a CCWG is, I'm not going to try and explain that to you. The permanent bit is just saying that instead of it being chartered by SOs and ACs and them therefore obviously being able to uncharter it, and instead of its powers being defined in its charter, these two matters would have to be dealt with in the ICANN bylaws, because otherwise, by definition, A, it isn't permanent, and B, it wouldn't actually be able to do the kinds of things that we expect this thing to do. Which takes us right on to the next one. The community council is structured like a CCWG, essentially, but is permanent. So in your mind, you can almost bracket the two. They're very similar. They create groups of people drawn from the existing SOs and ACs to come together and exercise the powers the community decides should be exercised with whatever voting thresholds should be exercised. There are some key things that we need to think through with these. One of them is who is represented. So what is the community that's being represented? Is it our existing SOs, ACs? Does it need to be broader than that? And with what weights are these parts of the community weighted? The proposals both have a consistent equal representation between the three SOs and equal representation between the three ACs, but lesser. So the SOs have got five reps each in these models. The ACs have got two, if you pick the bigger option in each of them. The next two mechanisms, supervisory board, is defined as a more kind of European model, where there's a board created by the community which has these reserve powers that sits alongside or over the ICANN board. The fourth and fifth of these mechanisms are not creating a group within ICANN under the current structure, but involve changing the corporation so that it is either membership-based in the case of members under California law, with the members having a set of powers as set out in that legislation and in the bylaws as they would be amended, or delegates are kind of a subset of members. That you have to identify them in the same way you have to identify members, but they just have a limited set of the powers that members could have. Now, choosing between these mechanisms might be an objective question of lawfulness. You know, we might find that given the array of powers we want the community to have, some of these structures don't work in law, and we need our legal advisors to tell us that. We don't have them yet, they haven't answered that question for us yet. The last two on the table, existing SO and AC processes or community veto, don't involve creating any groups. There's no CCWG created or council created or board created, and they don't involve the creation of delegates or members who have kind of sovereign powers within the organization. Instead, they just say that for whatever community powers we're going to have, those are exercised by SOs and ACs deliberating internally and making a decision related to that power. So as an example, if there was a power for the community to remove the whole ICANN board, then it would be up to the CCNSO to have a debate and decide whether it wanted to vote in favor of removing the board. And the GNSO would do the same thing, and the ASO would do the same thing, GAC, and so on and so on. But they wouldn't be sitting around in a room. They wouldn't be having a conversation. They'd be making those decisions individually with whatever informal coordination they chose to have. So those two, and the community veto, I think, is similar. The community veto template that we've got specifies some particular powers that would be involved. And with each of them, there'd be different thresholds for use. So that's kind of the briefing. You know, the two first two are kind of creating a grouping that we're all kind of familiar with the structure with. The supervisory board is a little bit of a different structure. Delegates and members are things that are set out in California law that create these categories of people, either people or organizations that have powers within ICANN that are set out in the law. And the last two are just empowering the kind of organizations we've already got to do things following particular processes that are set out. Now, what the table does is it just arrays those seven mechanisms, and it tries to apply some judgments about the criteria that were sent around a few days or a week ago that had suggested some ways to test these mechanisms. And this table is not a consensus output of the working party. The working party hasn't debated this table and the judgments in it. I offer these judgments on my own responsibility only for you to consider. We didn't have time to get to this point before our last meeting on Wednesday. So I don't have any particular expertise in explaining what the criteria or the qualities on the column on the left are, but I think they're relatively self-explanatory. So that's the introductory, and I've tried to be fair-minded. I personally don't have a preference still here. I wouldn't try and decide a preference until I had seen the legal advice. My instinct is for something that's a bit more familiar as opposed to something that's a bit less familiar, but I'm just saying that to be transparent and accountable with and to you. So that's the intro, Thomas. Leon?
Thanks so much, Jordan. We would like to open it up for comments from the group. And just to be clear, we are not making any decisions right now, but we thought it might be easier to discuss, to Avery's point in the chat, to discuss the community powers not completely in isolation, but with a vision in mind of what the vehicle for that might be. We can always go back and revisit that, right? But we want to get a sense of options that we can clearly rule out and those that we can shortlist or are preferred. Chris, please.
Thank you. And Jordan, thanks. And Jordan, thank you. That's actually very useful. So I too would join you in having a preference for something that's simple and doesn't need, you know, and perhaps avoids the need to create a whole new set of structures. But I wanted to make one specific point, which is that I'm not sure that I agree that one can consider this without considering what it might be doing, because it is not impossible that you might have one mechanism for one thing and a different one for another. So to take a very simple example, you might say that for the absolute top end of the tree and the board spill, that needs something very specific, whereas for some of the other things building up to that, you don't need to have to go that far. So I'm just cautioning that perhaps we should also consider what it's going to be used for as well as what it is, because it might not be used for everything. There might be a need for two. But I'm massively in favor of something as simple and straightforward as possible. Thank you.
Avery's point, again, I think we do know what this is supposed to do. We're talking about approving a budget, approving a strategic plan, getting board decisions reviewed, approval of changes to the bylaws, and we're talking about the community power to spill the board. So it's not so we have an idea of what these things should be doing, right? Maybe not in glorious detail.
Misunderstood me, Thomas. I agree with you 100%. My point is that I might be, just to give you an example, I might be perfectly happy for there to be a standing CCWG to deal with budget approval, strategic plan approval, etc. But I might say, when it comes to spilling the board, I'm not comfortable having a committee do that. I want that to be done by a different mechanism that involves enrolling all of the SOs and ACs. That's all I'm saying. So I'm saying the creation of whatever it is we create is not necessarily going to be the thing that does everything. You might need more than one mechanism.
And that's a good point. But still, I guess we have to, as a starting point, we need to take something and play this through. And if we see it doesn't work for certain things, then we can move to something else, right? But going back to the to the principles that we suggested for this meeting is let's try to work on the basis of what we know, what we're comfortable with, and then move somewhere else should there be new suggestions or legal advice coming in that advises otherwise. So next in the queue is Alan, please.
Two comments. My first one is what Chris just said, and I think it's really important. I don't think we need to play through. I think we already have to some extent done that. And we need expediency for approving budgets. We need the import of real community action to get rid of the board. They're a really different level of issues, so I think some of us, anyway, have already thought this through pretty carefully. The point I was going to raise, however, is on the more onerous things, overriding the board, spilling the board, things like that, I'm really worried that we're putting a lot of time into an effort and a process that will be virtually unusable. It is very hard to imagine an issue where the majority, or probably a supermajority of the ACs and SOs in ICANN feel something is very, very important. The organization of the CCWG was one that triggered such an action, but it's hard to think of a more operational one that would ever get, you know, the CCNSO, the GNSO, the SSAC to all say we have to act. In most cases that are really important to someone, several of the others will say, I'm sitting out on this. So the issue of how we handle abstentions is going to be important, and we want to make sure that decisions that are onerous cannot be made only by the few vested stakeholders who have a real interest and something vested in it. So I'm really worried that we're putting a lot of time into something that will either become dangerous or never be used. So something to think about.
Alan, the second part of your comment is exactly the kind of comment I think we need to not be having now, because I think that we need to be having, if whether removing the board or not is a good thing to do, whatever way we do it is a discussion we need to have when we talk about removing the board. All I'm asking you to do is for a thought experiment here to help you work through the logic of these three different kinds of structures, right? That's why I'm suggesting that we don't focus on what they're going to do at this point. That we're going to end up reconciling that all and integrating it all. It's just that in this stage of the discussion, it's probably not going to help.
Very briefly, Alan.
I wasn't trying to talk about what we were doing. I was simply pointing out that things like when you look at these mechanisms, you also have to, in parallel, look at the voting structures, if there is voting, and things like that, because that becomes really crucial part of it,
but
not the substance of the decisions.
So those voting mechanisms need to be defined for each power. I don't think anyone has said that whatever body you create is going to work the same way on each power. Right.
Okay, next in line is Sebastian.
Thank you. I would like to suggest that, thank you for this table, it's very useful. I would like to suggest to add one row and maybe one column. One row will be about diversity. On all those solutions, what is the degree of diversity we can achieve? And I will not answer to the values diversity that we need to achieve. And the second, it's a lot of AC and ASO have a council. Why not to think about adding a column with a gathering of all the councils of the ASO and ACs in a body who could be the, let's say, the parliament of the organization. That's something, I guess, not too difficult to set up, and who could be an adding value in your table. And if you think that for that we need to write a specific document, I will be willing to do it if you ask me to do it. Thank you.
So, Jordan, in order to be as helpful as I can on this question you put to us, I would suggest that the way we're arraying them is conflating ease of creation to ease of operation. And this was something we did discuss briefly in Frankfurt, is that if it turns out that one of these structures is very well suited to lots of the powers, but it's very difficult to establish, it may, however, be very easy to maintain once it's established. So the pains of getting the legal advice, setting the thing up, resolving and negotiating the voting, I realize that all of that is painful to go through, but once it's done, it might be relatively easy to administer. And I do support your point that we want to pick the simplest to operate of all of these that will still get us the powers we need. And I concur with your point is that we prefer one and not multiple structures if that one structure can administer all of the powers. And I realize it may not make it a perfect fit in every case, but if it turns out that you need statutorily defined members for the power to spill the board, then I believe the burden of proof ought to be on us to suggest why that's not appropriate for some of the other powers. Because if you've already established it and gone through that pain and suffering, we now have something in place. Because I don't think the community members, speaking for the commercial stakeholders group, would want to have multiple structures to maintain instead of just one.
Well, it's a little bit difficult. It looks like nobody is really trying to favor an option, either for the lack of legal advice, as Robin said, but I think we need to be brave to make progress. I think we need to dive into just toying with one or two of the options and see how far we get with that. So I hope that you will join me in just picking one, right? And then let's try to apply the community powers on the basis of that vehicle and readjust if need be. So since we're talking about community empowerment all the time, I'm inclined to pick either the first or the second option because that's what we know best. We know how to run cross-community working groups. So let's just assume for a second we did have Pedro, your hand was... I'm so sorry. Please make your intervention.
Yes, thank you. No, I just wanted to seek for clarification and ask... Jordan, to elaborate a little bit more on the difference between the permanent CCWG and the community council, because from the description that you have sent, I couldn't see really no fundamental difference, and if it wouldn't be the case to just stick with one. Thank you.
It's a very fair point. The reason that there are two templates there is because... there was a work item to do one for the permanent CCWG, and so I did one. And all I did was copy and paste all of the content from the community council template, which happened first. So aside from the label, I can't recall any substantive design differences between the two. You could argue that a permanent CCWG is just a logical impossibility because, by definition, CCWGs are not permanent. So I think it's helpful to think of them as basically being the same beast. Yeah.
The line 15 makes the distinction. You know, so cross-community working group, according to our definition, would include parties. Like chartering organizations within the ecosystem, while the community council is an invention or a word that Jordan made up to display the more inclusive thought that we can have a representation of other groups on that community council as well. And I guess that's the only real difference. But the idea would be that there is a group that would be equipped with certain powers and that has representation from the various groups inside the ICANN ecosystem in it, you know, without the limitation of the CCWG. Chris.
Thomas, I just wanted to support your idea to, well, two things. One, let's go through one of them and see if it works. Secondly, if you want courage and you want us to be brave, I'll be brave enough to say I would be very uncomfortable with
the third and fourth mechanisms. I think they're too complicated. I'd be perfectly comfortable with a community council slash whatever, with the exception that getting up to the level of board spill, I think that really is something which I would not be prepared to accept, the abdication of the responsibility for that from the SOs and ACs individually up to a committee. I think that needs to be dealt with in the SOs and ACs itself. So I'm very happy to go through the community council one. I think that's a great idea.
Alan, Jonathan, and then I think we should dive into discussing the power so that it becomes more concrete. Alan.
I basically support what Chris just said. I think the community council is the right one. I'll point out the issue of a community working group not allowing other people on it. The CWG, IANA, has other people on a community working group. That was simply a choice that was made. So I don't think there's any difference, and I'd prefer to use a different name because the CWG has certain implications, or CCWG, that we probably want to avoid in this case. So I would opt for the community council. I also have an aversion to the supervisory boards and things like that.
Thanks, Alan. Jonathan?
Yes, Jonathan Zook for the transcript. I guess I would like to express an interest in having the community powers have primacy over our preference for an organizational construct. So I think that unfortunately we're asking the question backwards to say which of these we would prefer, because absent that essential criteria, which is the ability to exercise those community powers, I don't believe we have the information to form a preference between them. And we can form an emotional preference because one feels like it would be less work to implement or we'd be more comfortable with it. But if we feel good about the community powers, and I think that we do, I think fundamentally that's got to drive our preference. We've already decided which of these is our favorite. We just don't know what it is yet. But we've actually decided which one is our favorite by determining the community powers we want to make sure that that process includes.
That's a helpful comment. And just to maybe give a little bit of background, if everybody in the room said we want this to be a membership structure, then then certain factors would be predetermined in terms of representation, in terms of voting, and potentially other areas. Well, you know, my sense is that there's a lot of sympathy for the community-based things, you know, either option one or two. And what we would like to do now is just have the discussion about the powers against that backdrop, if you wish, and then see where do we want to allocate the community powers? Who has how many representatives on this panel? And then the question of voting thresholds comes into play when we go through the various mechanisms. So I think we should end this part of the discussion on the options here. Move to the powers, unless Paul and
let's make a comment.
We have Paul, and you want to lower your hand, or
if you want to move to powers, just to powers.
Paul,
I was just again going to ask a question, which is under any of these, we create authority for a supervisory group, however it's constructed. With authority comes responsibility. So I was going to suggest adding under 16 or something the question of liability of the statutory board, delegates, members, or community council people. Right here, right now, I can say anything I want, and because I have no power, nobody's going to sue me or blame me if anything goes wrong. If this group reconstitutes itself as a board-spilling authority and it votes in some way that is somebody else disagrees with, it will be subject to account in some external body, perhaps, and I wouldn't participate if it was going to cost me my livelihood.
Matthew Vey speaking. Before we move to powers, I think what I wanted to look at into this table is that if you look at the way Jordan has been framing this, my reading is that we have an option between something, some mechanism that is more rooted into the ESO and AC mechanisms, but probably with a lower number of people. That's what I see in your analysis in this table. So closer to the existing ICANN mechanisms, but maybe with greater liability or at least relying on a smaller circle of persons, and therefore might be perceived as more prone to capture than if we have a larger set of people like a community council, permanent CCWG, which would also enable to add extra people from outside of the community. But that's slightly less, slightly more complex to set up because it's a bit of a new structure, although it can be rooted on existing stuff. And I think that's the value I see in this table, that the kind of choice we'll have to make will be between these kind of options. And of course, there are other options, but which are still under development on the members and everything, which we see as, so far, a bit harder to design. And one parameter I would like to stress, which we have to keep in mind, is the implementation time for all of this. And that's probably what is going to rule out some of the statutory members or delegate options, because we might run into a problem of implementation time to take into account. And bear in mind, we want something that is can be set up very quickly for Workstream 1. So that's the kind of, value I see in this before we go to the powers.
Jonathan, Jordan has the waited to speak, and then Athena, Jonathan Zook, and then we move to the powers.
Can I come back to what Jonathan said first and to say that, yes, that there is no right way to have this discussion. Wherever we started, we would have problems of order and logic here. Clearly, we need to get legal advice that advises us whether what mechanisms we can use to implement the powers that we choose. And the mechanism should be selected based on its ability to do what we need to have done. So if we form some view that we like the sound of a community council, but the lawyers come back and say, actually, you can only do that through a membership structure, then we're going to need to have a membership structure if we want to do whatever that is. And so no one is asking anyone to make decisions about this. This is just to start people thinking about these three different types of things. One is a group of people empowered to make decisions. One is changing, creating sovereign members in the organization. And one is relying on existing entities and powers to have some processes they can follow to do things like community vetoes and so on. There is no right way to tackle it, so we're just going to need to push through and get to an answer on it. The second point is that there are a few suggestions that have been made for new rows on the table. Diversity was suggested. Picking out the simplicity one that I think is there somewhere, if not, it should be. Yeah, overall simplicity to execute and simplicity to run, maintain. The liability question should probably be mentioned there, but the only thing I'd say to that is that whenever you're handing power to someone, responsibility comes with it, and therefore liability comes with it as well. In a post-NTIA contract world, where currently the USG takes that on and the board members have some fiduciary responsibilities that generate liability, if we're going to give powers to a new set of people, they are going to have some liability attached, and there can be all sorts of insurances purchased and so on to help mitigate that, but identifying it is a useful suggestion. The other one that was suggested as a row is kind of implementation time for these mechanisms as best we can work it out. In terms of actually entirely new mechanisms, Sebastian Bachelet did suggest one. It would be great if you could fill out the template for this Parliament of ICANN, and then we can feed it into the mix. I think it's worth just fleshing it out so people have a concrete idea of what you're suggesting. And that, those are just the responses that I wanted to make to the discussion that's happened.
Thanks, Jordan. Athena.
Yes, thank you very much. I also agree that this is a very helpful table. And, of course, we need like some legal advice for each mechanism and so on. I was wondering, are we going to share this table with the legal advisors? Because maybe this would be helpful for them to realize what aspects we are looking for, what where their focus should be, and what questions we want to be answered. Thank you.
Immediate response to that?
Thank you, Athena. Yes, we will definitely put this in the hands of the lawyers. We're going to have a coordination meeting with the legal advice team tomorrow night. And, yeah, this is definitely something we will need to put in the hands of the lawyers to consider so we can have a timely legal advice for all to consider the different options. And we've so far included some questions in the legal scoping document that at some point deal with some of the concerns that haven't raised so far. So yes, the short answer is we'll definitely have this put in front of the lawyers.
Thanks. Move on to discussing the powers, but nonetheless, Jonathan and then Jan. Keep it brief, please.
Sorry, yes, Jonathan Zook. Oh, my microphone's on now. Thank you very much for your comments. I guess maybe the way to have a discussion is to come up with some kind of framework to assess the mechanisms. Once we know which ones will actually give us the power, we can sort of come up with priorities. But I'm very concerned about how that conversation goes in advance, because already we're talking about, well, maybe these will take too long, and that will be a mechanism for eliminating one of them. And if that's a mechanism for eliminating one of them, we're already saying that our preference of mechanisms takes primacy over the actual powers that we want to give the community. And I think we need to ensure that these community powers, specifically in Workstream 1, which is this ultimate accountability, whatever form that takes, has to take primacy over whatever preferences we may have emotionally for one mechanism over another. So I think that's the danger of that conversation. So we can talk about what our preferences would be relative to the ones we are told will work to deliver that power, but the fact that something might be harder to implement means that we need to push the deadline, not change the mechanism.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jan.
Jan Schulte. Just one question of curiosity, the transition question to the powers. But is there any relationship between this construction and the internal-external debate of who's going to hold the IANA contract and award and withdraw it and so on? Is this going to figure into that at all? In which case, you probably have to have a coordination with the CWG about what you're talking about here. The second thing was a little bit Mathieu's caution at the beginning. In this room, one might be very attracted by the CCWG permanent, etc., but outsiders might have more debates about it, and so maybe thinking about how the reception would be later on. And the third was just about the name. Community council sounds a little bit like my local authority. Maybe that's fine, but if you wanted to play into the language of stakeholders, then maybe you'd want to call it a stakeholder council, or you could call it an assembly, perhaps, because council also sounds a bit executive at times, and it might create confusion between board and council. But anyway, that's just some loose thoughts.
Thanks, Jan. Actually, there might be dependencies with the CWG, because depending on what powers we give the community and how robust that is, the CWG might want to lean on that and build on it, particularly for the internal solution that that they're discussing. Jordan, I would really like to move to the powers now, so I think we should start discussing those. So maybe you can give us a quick introduction on the first couple of powers, and then we discuss them.
Okay. But I'll just finish by saying the value of this discussion has been that we've added some more rows to this table, so there are more factors that we will have thought about as ways, once we have the information that Jonathan talked about, to make a decision. So that we'll do another issue of this table after this meeting with some extra points, and I'd encourage people to review it and improve it and give suggestions for things that they want rows about, you know, more points we can knit out. On the powers, I circulated, how do you want me to do this? Because there's a few of them. What do you want to discuss? Do you want to go through them and talk about the detail? Or do you want to just me present the list so that people have them all in mind?
I think we should maybe pick one that illustrates how the community powers can be exercised. So why don't we move to the approval of the budget, for example, which might be hopefully an easier one to discuss, and then move to others.
Sure. So that's item 1C in the reading list, community approves budget or strategic plan. Where is Roloff? Do you want to present this, or do you want me to do it? Yep. Okay. So if you have a look at this, this was framed in the way that not that the community would approve the budget or the strategic plan, but that it could be kicked back. So it's not trying to give this community body the ability to write the budget or to amend the budget. It's saying that it is, if the budget isn't acceptable to the community, it can force it back to the board for further reconsideration. It's a check and balance that is part of the normal planning process, so it's not a triggered mechanism, which is why we worked on it. And what it would cause would be the board to go away, look at the budget, to pay attention to the concerns that had led to this step happening, and presumably to either change the budget or to come up with a better explanation for why it wants to do what it does that persuades the community so that another blocking power isn't implemented. In terms of the standing for this, it would be the stakeholders within the ICANN community. We haven't fleshed out the detail of who could initiate a challenge like this. And it would be helpful to link, in terms of standard of review, the discussion we were having before the coffee break, the kind of principles and values mission statement being the core of what is being tested. Because I assume that in terms of this budget, the community's concerns will be where the executive of the board is spending money in areas the community doesn't think it should be, or isn't spending money in areas that the community thinks it should be. If we move down the template a bit further into the composition, I'm going to skip over that one because that comes down to the mechanism that we choose. You know, this power feels to me on a similar scale to the rejection of bylaws changes in terms of the weightiness of it, though others might disagree. And so to me it's something that could be part of a mechanism that did more than one thing. If you can keep scrolling down to the next page, many of these, again, are mechanism points. And you can see that we had some internal discussion about the decision-making process. And this is a good example that applies to all of these powers. There's a question, whatever structure we put in place, do people have to go back and talk to their SOs and ACs? So is there a kind of dialogue requirement? Or do they have to go away and get a positive decision empowering them to vote from their SOs and ACs? That's something to think about. We haven't recommended that, but we do draw it to your attention to think about. the decision-making here, the view was that it shouldn't be a consensus matter, that you shouldn't have to achieve complete community consensus to send a budget back for further board reconsideration, but that it would have to be a high threshold, a supermajority. And if you scroll down as well, the timeframe requirements mainly relate to what the planning process requires. So the strategic plan, you know, is a five-year plan, covering it through one ICANN meeting over a six-month timeframe should be manageable. And in terms of the budget, sending that back, Rulof has proposed a shorter time frame of 3 months. You know, the budget is generally presented, I think, before the start of the financial year. Is that, can someone tell me that? And I can.
The budget is presented normally around about, starts to be presented around about the beginning of the calendar year. But I've got some comments about that, which I'll make when it's my turn.
And the implementation of this is generally just a matter of including it as a power in the bylaws that empower whatever our mechanism is. So that's a brief talk through the template. You can tell from my slight hesitation that I haven't read this one for a while. So that's the explanation for that.
There's a queue forming, and I think we need to structure the debate a little bit in order to be productive. But there are, I guess this example is very helpful. It triggers a couple of questions that I would like you to respond to if you can. We're talking about votes. I think this group hasn't yet made a decision as to whether we're going to use voting or consensus-based decision-making as we would do in other areas of ICANN. So please give us an indication as to whether you think vote would be appropriate for this community power. Also, please give us an indication as to whether you think votes should be mandated or not. Right? You know, when we discuss this, I'm just afraid that, you know, since the queue is forming, that we're going to get things that are all over the responses that are all over the place. But I think we should try to get a sense of what the preferences of this group are. With that, I'd like to move to Chris.
Thank you, Thomas and Jordan Roloff. I guess the other people on the team, thank you very much. This is actually a really, really useful example because it throws up a number of different points that we're going to need to deal with. First thing it throws up is, it's pretty clear, isn't it, that the part of the community that engages with the budget process is not going to necessarily be a full-blown committee itself, but it's likely to be a subgroup of that committee with people who understand budgets, and that is kind of canvassed in here by the section that talks about the skill set required. So I think it would be worthwhile to make sure that when we're explaining what we're doing, if we choose to, let's take the community council as an example, because let's just use that as our example, that we should make it clear that it would be our intention that the community council would itself set up subgroups to deal with specific things, unless you're suggesting that the community council could only have people on it who are experienced in budgets. So one assumes that you're going to want to be able to set up a sort of, perhaps a slightly smaller group to liaise on the budget. And that's worth thinking about and worth putting into the mix. Secondly, from a timing point of view, and I'm specifically talking about the budget now, it is incredibly difficult to complete the budget cycle on time currently, because of the desire to have iterations out for public comment and because of the way that the ICANN meeting structure works. Xavier and the team have taken 2 years to basically work out a process that should just about be workable to get the budget approved properly in Buenos Aires with the community having had full input as possible into it. So I would recommend that in respect to this, that this process needs to be baked into the budget process. In other words, this is not a committee that is formed at the end of the budget process to oversight, but rather is a committee that is actually baked into the budget approval process right the way through, so that if there is a call going to be made that says we're not going to accept the budget, it's made, you know, well, hopefully it won't be made because this committee will have helped all the way through, but if it is made, you know, it's been telegraphed. Otherwise, we're going to have to add in an extra lump of time for this group to do their work at the end of the process, and that's not going to work from a timing point of view because the budget needs to be approved before the end of the financial year. Thanks.
This is Mathieu.
Thanks, Thomas and Chris, for kicking off the discussion. I wanted to elaborate on this and share that I have a very different approach to this, let's call it the stakeholder assembly, than the one you're describing, Chris. I think we should not do it a working group. It is not designed, in my opinion, to be a working group going through meetings after meetings of digging into the discussions. I am seeing this very much, and I'm sorry to be blunt, as a general assembly. And a general assembly is feeding, each member is feeding on the ASO, AC, whatever input they want to, and make their own decisions. But in terms of planning, it means in the budget cycle, there's an approval of the budget by the board, and maybe a month later, I mean, you have a 15 days or three weeks notice period, but everyone's been, is supposed to have been engaging with their community to form an opinion on this, and it's exceptional measures to reject a budget is already a very strong signal. And rejecting or approving a budget by a narrow majority would already be a very strong signal for the organization, I hope. And so the way I think this, so this is the vision I'm trying to share on how it works, because what we are, we have a lot of working groups working on the budgets already. We don't need more. But maybe at some point, and I have memories of the SOP working group within the CCTL, the CCNSO, saying very clearly to the board, we think you should not approve this budget at some point. That happened because it had been several years we were unsatisfied. And so this group might have said to the CCNSO representatives in this stakeholder assembly, please vote against the budget, and that's all. So if I go down into the discussions that we have to go down through, is should there be mandated or non-mandated votes? And I think that leads to a, if it's mandated vote, if the ASOs mandate their representatives, then let's not do the stakeholder assembly. Let's stick with ASO and AC chairs or councils, but probably more chairs, because it's a block vote. And I think we would be losing out of the diversity within the ASO and ACs if we were to do that. And that's why I would be more encouraged in a budget approval case, but also in other cases, having the diversity within each of the groups, providing each of the groups the ability to nominate, appoint, whatever, a diversity of members in this group so that majorities or super majorities can be formed out of part of the ALAC membership plus part of the GNSO membership plus part of the GAC membership. Our community is not only driven by consensus within the ASO and AC silos. There might be some things transversal as well. So that's why when I'm looking at this, I think this pushes me towards a broader set of representation in the mechanism, because I would enable the formation of consensus or at least broader views than if we are in a mandated situation or with a very small group. And finally, and that's the reaction on the template, I think if there was a majority of stakeholders that would reject the would be in a position to reject the budget, that should suffice to reject the budget. And a supermajority approval seems to me a bit overkill, because if imagine the community is half-half over the budget or the strategic plan, that means we're not doing consensus with the strategic plan or the budget. And to me, it feels like it's a dangerous situation for ICANN. So I would actually suggest to remove the super majority requirement in this document. So that's just to kick off some of the substantial discussions.
Thanks, sir. Next is Alan.
Thank you. First, a caution.
Jordan is using the word consensus in the CCNSO definition of it. Different. You imply that a single group can break consensus. That means you're using it for ASEAN unanimity or close to it. Okay. But other groups within ICANN have very different meanings of the same word. The ALAC means consensus is about equivalent to a supermajority. The GNSO has an extra number of adjectives to describe it. So if you mean unanimity, say it, because the word consensus is going to be misunderstood. So that's just a caution. In terms of whether we use unanimity or voting or whatever, I think it's going to be case by case, because I think... Okay. sorry, I thought we were... I didn't realize we were talking budgets, explicit only in budgets. Yeah, if I'm wrong. Budgets, I think, I agree with Magic that, you know, a majority can vote down. I don't think it needs... I think that's what you said. Yeah. And in terms of whether... If this group is going to be a discussion group to discuss and negotiate, then it may well be a different person. You know, I may be the formal representative of the ALAC. I may not be the best person to go and debate budgets. So if it's going to be discussion as opposed to just casting a yay-nay ballot or something, then I think we need the ability of having delegates or something like that. I don't think it should be a discussion group, but if it were to be, then I think you have to factor in making sure you get the right person there. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Sebastian?
Yeah, I have the impression that we are trying in this exercise to solve a problem in putting an upper body because we have difficulty with the process currently followed by the budget. And I just want to remind you that the board is selected by the community. And if we want another organization selected by the same community in another way to oversight what the decision taken by the board, we are really creating a body of our body, and then we will need another one. And I agree that there are discussion to be taken around the budget. But I am not sure that it's because we will have an oversight body that we will solve those issues. And let's take that as an issue and how we can solve it in the process or to change the current process to have that the trouble by part of the community to be taken into account by staff when they build the budget and by the board when they vote the budget. I can come with some idea on that, but I am not sure that it's a central topic of the discussion. But I really don't think that the budget is a good issue to be taken into account to discuss the oversight mechanism for ICANN. Thank you.
And Jordan?
Thanks. It's a bit weird being a rapporteur, so I thought I should get in the speaking list to express my opinion on the substantive stuff. In terms of votes or unanimity, I think it has to be votes, because I don't think any single person or single constituency should be able to block this power, so I stand on the votes side. In terms of mandated decisions or not, I stand on the not side for this power, because I think that part of the whole point is to have a cross-constituency conversation to test ideas and to decide whether the overall picture is serious enough to require the budget to be sent back to the board or not. I don't think that you get that by just inviting each SO and AC within its own sealed sort of walls, its own silo, making those calls on its own. I think you'd miss the point of this power, so I think it shouldn't be mandated. In terms of contrasting where Chris sort of saw this working and where Matthew saw this working, it's the latter. It's the, I don't want this group appointing a budget study group and a strategic plan study group and stuff. This is meant to be the, a kind of veto point if things get bad. And what it's about saying, I also disagree with Sebastian, this is about saying who has the power here. And yes, we do elect the board, but the point is that we elect board members over periods of years to do the whole of corporation job, the whole job that they do. The fact is that if we disagree with a particular budget at a particular time, being able to elect the next board in however many extra years that is, it isn't what we need. People are asking for a more direct accountability response than that. So I don't think we should have study groups. Like, there is this SOP one that the CCNSO does. I'm sure other constituencies look at the budget as time does. I'm sure we shouldn't be using this mechanism to try and improve ICANN's budget building process. But I'm sure that we're likely to get a better ICANN budget building process if the corporation knows that at the end of the day, if the community doesn't like its budgets, rather than them going, well, you know, if you don't like it, elect a new board later, they can go, well, we'll just block this and you'll have to do it again. So with most of these mechanisms, we never want to have to use them. It's the fact of their existence that will shape people's behavior in a way that improves the overall state of things in ICANN. So that's all. Thanks.
Thanks. So I get it. I've got a couple of concerns. But first of all, if what you're saying is it's a, and I just use Mathieu's expression, you know, like a general assembly, then it seems to me that the required skill set part of this document doesn't work, because unless you're saying that, you know, the general assembly can only be a general assembly of those with the required skill set, then that doesn't make sense. So I don't understand how that those two fit together. Secondly, I have a concern, quite a serious concern, that structuring this in a way that prevents capture, even if it's accidental, is going to be difficult. Let me give you an example. If you could envisage a circumstance where a number of the SOs and ACs have issues with or object to the budget for entirely different reasons, and choose to vote against the budget for completely different reasons from each other, which has the net effect of the budget not being passed, but makes actually making the corrections almost impossible because everybody is voting for different reasons. And I think you'd need to overcome that in order for it to be successful as a mechanism for the overarching good of ICANN rather than a mechanism for the protection of the individual SOs and ACs. Thanks.
I think you can't possibly come up with a mechanism that that makes these issues go away. I think the community has to come up with the approval of a budget, and that needs discussion, that needs compromise, as we have in other areas. But if we want this type of community empowerment, I think we have to live with some of the remaining risks that this might have. Steve?
Can I just answer Chris's procedural point about why the qualities of people needed is there? This template, I think, was finalized in late February. It was a few weeks before we got to the point of crystallizing our mechanisms. One of the reasons that, with all due respect to the co-chairs, I really, really don't like this template is because it blends how you do it with what you're doing. So when you're reading these powers templates, seriously, pay less attention to things like who is doing it and so on. When you're reading the mechanisms templates, pay more attention to that kind of stuff. So it's just a guidance that will make your lives easier.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think on the budgetary point, I think there's one item missing. At least I couldn't find it. And that's a term I think you would want to introduce to make the whole process more accountable and sustainable. And this is, I think, the notion of a risk factor. Because you don't want, there's no need, I mean, to get involved in all the budgetary and principles of or the budgetary processes. But once there is an understanding that a risk factor, that there might, with certain actions, there might be a high risk factor involved in the organization, that's, I think, where one could think about introducing what you are talking about, something new. But without a risk factor and a more clearly understanding what a risk factor to the organization actually could mean, I would caution probably not to move forward.
Yeah, my co-chair, I'm not sure I completely understood that point. Do you, just so that we can capture it, maybe you can help me understand. If it's clear for everybody else in the room, that's fine, but I'm not sure what the call is for us to do.
I assume that the introduction of the engagement of the community into the budget is done because there's an understanding that certain risks in the past were taken that we are not in coherence with the overall goals of ICANN. Am I correct? I'm correct, yeah? Or not?
The reason for this power being requested is more fundamental. The community shall have the authority to shape ICANN's future actions, and that goes both with the bylaws as well as the strategic plan and / budget.
Independently from any risk factor that the management or the board is moving into direction which the community thinks is not in coherence with the overall goals.
That is my understanding.
Is it your understanding or is it correct?
There are a few occasions where my understanding is not correct.
Just asking. Okay. If it is a general introduction without any risk first, I could understand it when this is typically what is done in other environments when the risk factors, when an organization or company moves into areas which are not incoherent with the current goals and where the stakeholders don't feel comfortable with, then typically the introduction of a risk factors kicks in where the stakeholders want to get involved in budgetary issues as well. Okay, if this is not the case, what was my misunderstanding?
Making relating to specific risks, that is more the community power to have certain board actions or inactions reviewed and the strategic plan approved to see where ICANN is moving. So I see this rather as a general power to make sure that ICANN does not plan for excessive expenditures or, you know, other types of areas, that budget allocation is appropriate. But I'm sure that Rodolf, who's also in the queue, who is Mr. Budget from recollection, I mean, whenever he's coming see the GNSO Council, he speaks to budgetary issues. So we'll get to that in a moment. Next in the queue is Tijani.
Thank you, Thomas. We said that we have to start, it is better to start from what we have now. And what we have now, especially this year, we have a deep consultation between the finance department and the community about the budget before going to the board. And this consultation concerns all the constituencies of ICANN. So the diversity Matthew was speaking about is there. And I think that this is better than having to reject the project, the budget, when it is already approved by the board, because you will have the problem to have starting a year with a budget not approved. So now we have something. It is not binding, that's sure. We can make it as a power for the community, but I think that it is better to do it like this. And it is not done one time. It is done step by step. As the finance department is developing the budget, we have consultation.
I think that by suggesting a community power to approve the budget, we're not suggesting that all the discussions that are taking place currently should be abandoned. So this is just a matter of last resort, basically, to step in case we see expenditures growing by 200% or something like that. I would like to close the queue after Chris. We need to test the waters on some specific questions before we break for lunch. Next in the queue is Steve.
Thank you. Steve Del Bianco. Four of the stress tests, four of the 25, deal with
budgets in a way that's, I think, is much more extreme than the operational budget concerns that we raised today. Today, we participate as a community in shaping the priorities of the budget. We have a public comment period on the budget itself, which opened just last week. And it's probably going to be rare that an ordinary budget will generate such concern by the community that would resort to a veto because a few of them didn't get their pet projects funded. That's not really what's anticipated here. Instead, consider that these stress tests look at things like the domain industry going into a financial crisis, where a whole lot of TLD operators were to fail. There's significant litigation that brings about huge costs on ICANN. Number eight was a technology has arisen that competes so significantly with the DNS that registration of domain names becomes a lot less needy. So prices begin to fall, number of registrations begin to fall. So the idea here is that if bad things happened, then the ICANN budget becomes a real struggle. The community has to work with ICANN to figure out whether they're going to raise the fees on those who still remain to cover revenue shortfalls, or slashes to expenditures that will certainly affect the organization's ability to ensure compliance, might ensure support of the community as it's in the middle of PDPs. So both revenue and expenditure decisions will have to be made when there's a period of a crisis. And therein lies the point where this power starts to become feasible and beneficial, that the community itself will try to express what the preferences are as management tries to work it out. But if management and the board come back with a proposal that it doesn't accommodate the majority of the suggestions on where revenue is going to be increased and where expenditures are going to be cut, well, then a majority to supermajority, I guess I'm indifferent between the two, would want to send it back to the drawing board to work things out. Now, I wanted to ask a question of the rapporteur. On the first page, there's a standard of review. And in there, you filled in the ICANN bylaws and articles, public interests, financial stability, and impact of the budget. So that statement under standard review starts with, well, the very thing we spent the morning discussing with Becky, right? This part of the bylaws where the core values are listed. And several of those core values concern a limited mission. So I could well imagine that a standard review potentially could look at ICANN as got budget items in there that go outside of its limited mission. But the rest of the items in the standard of review would be very difficult to tie back to some document someplace so that they could be measured. And finally, when you put a standard of review in there, you imply that somebody has to determine whether the standard has been met. And we typically turn to, what, an independent review panel, outside body to decide that. In this case, it sounds to me like the standard review stuff ought to be taken out, because this is a supermajority or majority simply rejecting a budget without necessarily having to meet a standard of review to do so. That would be my final comment. Thank you.
And we will certainly note that. Roloff.
Thank you, Thomas. I think most of my comments are general, not specifically to this budget vetoing power. I'm getting a bit confused about how we use the distinction between a mandated decision and a non-mandated decision. In the template, the distinction is between a mandated decision and personal assessment. And I think that's a kind of a distinction that in practice probably won't be there. But I think we should also consider it leaving that choice to the communities or the constituencies. I think in many cases, a process whereby the representative of a community or the representatives of a particular community have to go back to that community to get their position will take an awful lot of time. It's also a question if it's useful if there are multiple representatives of a particular constituency then in that case, because they will all have to get back to their constituency, get the position, and come back to whatever kind of group they're in. They will have the same position, but then five times. And it will be valid for all the representatives of the other constituencies as well. So My personal opinion is that in most cases this will only work if it is a mandated position, but if it is a personal assessment in the sense that you don't have to go back to your community and do what they say, but in most cases this is probably what the community will tell their representatives to do anyway, but they will decide the process themselves. And if they are happy that their representative takes a position by his or her own reflections, that's fine. It will probably make sure that they're very careful about choosing, selecting the people that they want to be in this kind of a structure that has this power. Secondly, on the point that Chris made, I put in supermajority specifically for that reason. By coincidence, so to speak, so different constituencies having different arguments with the budget, you might relatively quickly end up with a simple majority against the budget. With a supermajority, this is more difficult. So I think supermajority should be a standard threshold, and there might be an exception where we think, okay, majority is good. But for a budget, and especially to veto a budget that will kind of bring the organization to a standstill, I think this should be a supermajority. Thirdly, and I saw this on the chat, it's also a question in the template, and this is about geographical and or gender balance. I find it very difficult to grasp that one. I know what it means, but I think it will be very difficult to organize. And I was thinking about this. Imagine that every constituency has three representatives in this kind of a community council. And the CCNSO has two women and one man. And the GNSO has the other way around. Now, one of the women of the CCNSO is replaced by a man. Does that mean that we force the GNSO now to replace a man by a woman? So I think in the end, what I wrote down, we should leave this to the process of selection by the constituencies instead of putting it at this high level and saying, here we need a geographical and a gender balance. Because in practice, it will be inexecutable, and we risk that we are forcing groups to select people that they don't want to select because they lack certain skills.
Ellen?
Thank you. Just a couple of things. In relation to Jani's comment that there's a lot of discussion going on, hopefully that discussion yields a budget that everyone is happy with, and this whole process results in nil. We don't have to. This is an escape hatch. It's an escape hatch for things like revenue projections that are totally out of line, which might not be discussed with the community ahead of time. So I think we need to remember this is an escape hatch. It's not something that we're going to be doing on a regular basis. In terms of the balance, be it gender or anything else, as long as we give people the free rein to select people, we can't mandate balance. I think we have to work on that at the culture of the organization and how we select people for roles within the organization and get balance done at a much lower level. Then we don't have the problem of what happens at a higher level. We're far from it right now.
Thank you, Thomas. Just a couple of points. First of all, let me make it clear that I'm actually perfectly fine with having the budget ultimately in the hands of the community, but I've got some questions and some thoughts. I heard a number of people refer to it as an extraordinary measure and a measure of last resort, etc. Does that mean that this would not be a standing thing every year? Does that mean that this would only be called into being by some mechanism? Because if it's a last resort, if it's an emergency measure, then is the intention that there would be some trigger, whatever that might be, a vote of the SOs and ACs that would ping it into action? Because I'm getting some people nodding, some people looking puzzled, so we need to know the answer to that. Secondly, this point has come up on the list, and Jordan and I have been pinging back with some thoughts about it. There is a really key point here. If the budget is vetoed and sent back to the board, there are mechanisms in place to deal with that. one of the, and basically what you do is the board passes a resolution for a continuing budget, which effectively means that the current budget continues and flops over into the new financial year. That means that that the continuing expenditure can continue. What it doesn't mean, however, is that items in the new budget that are anticipated to happen in the first month or second month of that year can happen. They can't because the budget hasn't been approved. So if there was, for example, and I'm only using the ALAC summit as an example because it's the first thing that popped into my head, if there was an ALAC summit intended to happen in August and the budget had been vetoed, it could not happen unless there was some extraordinary mechanism for then approving individual items of a budget that had been vetoed, which becomes, you know, a bit nonsensical. And finally, and I don't want to be inflammatory about it, but I think this is a very fair point. Thomas came back and said that, you know, well, we may have to just deal with the fact that the community ends up possibly, you know, vetoing the budget for their own reasons. We can't look at everything. And Steve talked about this not being anticipated to be used as a veto for a pet project. I get all of that, and I agree with you 100%. But let me respectfully throw back at you what you've thrown at the board a number of times in these discussions. It's not you I'm worried about. It's the next set of people I'm concerned about. And we cannot build a mechanism that can be captured that easily. I'm massively in favour of having the veto, call it a veto thing. But we just need to be really careful how we do it. Thanks.
Thanks.
John, I closed the queue after Chris. Can you keep it very, very brief, please?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're going to have a mechanism like this, it imposes consequences. Yeah, if the fact is a thing isn't funded and vast amounts of money have to be spent cancelling an event, if that was a show pony event that the community really hated, that's exactly what should happen. And then the company learns the lesson. So none of the things you've been offering in that last intervention necessarily are unanticipated consequences. They're anticipated consequences of creating this mechanism. That's why it's there. And it is the fact that those consequences arise from using it that changes the dynamic about what's going to be in the budget in the first place, as long as you've got the high enough threshold. Yeah.
Can I just respond very, very briefly, Thomas? Jordan, I completely agree with you, but you've mischaracterized what I said slightly. I'm not talking about the veto of the budget resulting in something not happening that was the problem in the first place. I'm talking about the veto causing things not to happen that have nothing to do with the problem in the first place. And those two things are slightly different. Thanks.
You know, we want mechanisms with teeth. And therefore, I think this will call all the actors to the table to try find compromise solutions. So I guess before we break for lunch, we should try to find out whether there's agreement on a couple of points with regarding to this conversation. So first of all, you know, please get your computers ready to use the check marks in the Adobe. It is my understanding, listening to what the interventions brought up, that the budget question shall not be resolved by means of consensus, but by means of voting. So can you please confirm that this understanding is correct? So if you think this understanding is correct, please check the mark. If you are rather inclined to do this by virtue of consensus, please check the disagree mark.
Thomas, may I ask, just so that I'm clear, we're talking about whatever mechanism we use for doing this, the decision should be by vote. The decision of that mechanism to veto the budget should be by vote. If we agree or if it's by consensus, we put up the disagree.
Is that right? Correct.
Right, thank you.
Sorry, by consensus, are you talking about unanimity or not? Please be clear.
At the moment, we're just making the distinction between a voting mechanism and a consensus-based mechanism. We're not discussing whether full consensus or rough consensus would be required. That would be a second question in case the group thinks that we should work on the basis of consensus building and not on the basis of voting. So can I please ask you to use the check marks?
Sorry, Chair. To clarify what we're being asked,
Are you asking about the difference between a formal mechanism voting versus an informal mechanism consensus, or between a high level of agreement consensus versus a potentially lower level voting? Which of these distinctions are you trying to ask for us to choose between?
We have two mechanisms that we might deploy for finding out what the community wishes. We can do that by counting noses, i.e. by doing a voting type thing, or we can use consensus building. A consensus would be either full consensus or rough consensus, and we would need to talk about which definition of consensus we're using. But these are different approaches. When you're doing consensus calls, you do not count noses. So basically the question would be, do you want to count noses when it comes to approving the budget, or is that not the case?
Okay, I'm going to take that answer as meaning formality versus informality.
No, a consensus call is also formal.
In that case, I don't understand. I don't understand what you mean by consensus. Like Alan here, I'm not clear what you mean when you're saying a consensus thing as opposed to counting noses.
Alan, do you want to take a crack on that?
There are various television and radio shows where a comedian or someone else does something and then you count applause and try to see which applause is louder. That's a consensus without counting noses. In the GNSO, in the ALAC, we ask for, is there any opposition? One or two people raise their hands. No abstentions. That's consensus. You know, we're not actually counting the votes, but it's damn close. I think if this community is making any decision to override the board, we need accountability in this community, and we'd better be able to say how many people thought one and how many people thought another. I don't think there's any question.
I wanted to see answered by the group. So did that help understanding? So do you agree that we need a voting mechanism whereby we can count votes cast by individuals on the committee? Do you agree with that? And if so, please do use the check mark in the Adobe.
As opposed to a humming system or an overall, are there any abstentions which are not counted?
Which way is the tick?
The tick is looking at voting and recording who voted what. And counting votes. And we're not talking about majority levels at this point.
And it's a general principle. So we will talk about voting thresholds and something like that, how many votes there are. That's a separate discussion. So people do seem to favor the voting option.
Number of objections.
But we also note that there are two objections.
It's been reduced in the meantime.
So thank you for that. So you can clear that now. Then we would like to check whether you are more inclined to What's that?
We
have not.
Yeah, my question was, do you take into account the blank, the people who didn't vote? And I want to just underline that I didn't participate to this one.
Yes, because we can see who has voted and who has not, but we're just trying to sense the atmosphere to see whether we should continue our conversation on the basis of a voting mechanism or on the basis of a consensus mechanism. We can readjust. We're making no final decisions here.
There is no problem. We can discuss about pollution in Paris all the way we want and decide that we don't want, but the way we decide to avoid to have pollution, we can discuss it and discuss it. The problem is that I don't think that it's a good tool, and then I don't need to participate to this vote. That's just my point of view. I want to express
that. Thank you. The next question would be whether you think that these votes should be mandated by the respective groups. I heard Roloff speak to the practicality of that. So my understanding is that the group might rather see no requirement for those voting to be mandated by their respective groups. But for reasons of accountability, they will most likely check with their respective groups of what their views are. But the question is, you know, do we actually want to hard code the requirement of binding votes into this? And I think that, you know, listening to what to the interventions, that would likely not be the case. So if you are supporting the notion of not having mandated votes, not a requirement for mandated votes, then you can
requirement for
Can I propose that the vote is, if you think people should be able to exercise their discretion, do a green tick. If you think that they should have to be bound by their SORAC, vote no.
Yeah, but there's a third option.
What's the third option?
The third option was Roloff's suggesting that there is no requirement that the votes are mandated by the SOAC positions, but it's still open for some of the SOACs to do that.
Can
I make a much better solution? Can we go and have lunch and sort it out afterwards?
Eva, that was constructive as always.
Because I don't understand this.
The proposal that I made was actually to ask for the voting requirement. You know, if you agree that there should not be a requirement for mandated voting, then you should say yes.
Okay.
Becky.
No, if you want to have lunch.
Can you please use the microphone?
Yeah.
Please do use the microphone.
So we are not setting the requirement. The particular
yes.
constituency can still
can
use it as a requirement,
but
we leave it to the constituency. If we think that, we vote yes, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that a vote, or was that just an answer to my question? No, just sorry.
So give us a show of hands if you think that there shouldn't be this requirement, then you check yes. Green.
Thomas, may I try to state this? If you believe that the delegates to this body should be able to exercise their own judgment as to whether to exercise this power, vote yes. If you believe they must be bound to follow what the entity that sent them to that council has instructed them to vote, vote no.
No, Malcolm, we can discuss that over lunch, but your statement is not correct. The question is whether we are requesting mandated votes. So it can still be a mandated vote should the individual groups wish to make it mandated. But
let's have lunch.
But we've asked exactly that. So we're going to continue this game until late evening, but let's break for lunch first. We have we are going to reconvene at 14 hours, isn't it? So we have 1 hour of lunch, isn't it? Alice, can you confirm? Because I... Okay, so we reconvene at...
Can we leave things
you can leave your stuff in this room.